You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm the host of The Back 40, Mike Brine, agribusiness specialist at Trillium Mutual Insurance. When people think of brands, they often think of the large ones like Nike and Coke and Pepsi and all of those things. And we recognize those symbols as an established brand within the industry. But when it comes to branding farms, many of us have not considered whether we should actually brand a farm or not. Now, if someone is selling directly to the public, obviously that brand is very important, but that brand can be important to more than just those farms selling direct. We're talking today with Len Kahn from the marketing communications company Contact. Len, welcome to the Back 40.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your company.
Sure. Well, I was pleased to find out that we are fellow OAC grads, Mike. I took agricultural economics. I ended up with a master's in ag econ, and then I turned out to be my supervisor's biggest disappointment because after that, I got out of ag econ and into marketing. So we've been in business since 1994. In 2017, we became part of a larger company called RR46, which holds a number of different marketing and communications type agencies, a market research company. We focus exclusively on agriculture and food. Agriculture marketing is a very distinct niche on the food sector. We partner with an agency in Toronto called Nourish Food Marketing, and together we cover the whole ag and food spectrum.
So you're in a really good position here to understand what branding is and why it's so necessary in the farming community there. People think of brand as the symbol, but it's really more than that, isn't it? A brand represents so much more than just what you see when you look at some marketing information that may be put out by a company.
Branding is one of those big, wide, and deep topics. I think if you put the word brand or branding into Google, you'll get about 500 million results. So many people view brands in different ways. To me, the definition that resonates the most with myself, it's a little vexing. A brand is really the sum total of every experience someone has with you, your company, your product, your service. What makes that really interesting and challenging then is that the brand lives in the mind of the consumer. The brand is actually owned by the consumer. It's not owned by you. And every interaction you have with a consumer either enhances that brand or causes it to decline a little bit. So from a farming perspective, it's really interesting whether you are consciously building a brand for your farm or not, for yourself or not, there is a brand perception of you. So Mike Brine has a personal and a professional brand. People who know you, people who encounter you, people who listen to this podcast have a certain perception of you. So for a farm or a farm owner, farm family business, the brand is important, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that, but whether you're consciously building a brand or not, you have a brand.
That's somewhat like everybody talked about our reputation within the community as we're growing up and what people thought of you. It's all of that, but it's a little bit more as well, though, isn't it?
Branding, as legend has it, actually did start with agriculture. The word brand is associated with branding cattle. And so when this first came about, the brand was a way to identify your ranch's cattle. So it was usually a symbol. So that was on the tactical reason was to identify the animal. But what happened over time was a certain ranch's cattle and that rancher had a certain perception that was associated with the brand. So these animals may be put on weight more efficiently, or they were good breeders, or whatever the attributes were. So legend has it that was the beginning of the brand, and that more or less continues today. As you said, on the farm market, it's really interesting. So over COVID, there's a whole bunch of farm businesses that started to deal directly with consumers, especially in the early stages, because distribution was interrupted, revenues were challenged. So the classic sense of the brand is just that. Your Walkers down near Elmer have got into the dairy processing business. And so now there's a Walkers. I don't know what their brand is. They're producing A2 milk. under their brand. And there's people who got into selling, you know, farm fresh meat, things like that. So in the classic sense, your farm's brand tied to the product, that's what we commonly understand a brand to be. But as you know, the farming market's getting more complex all the time. So, you know, farmers need to have a relationship with their bank or their trust company. They need to rent land. So your reputation and your brand go into all of those kind of things, because if a landlord has multiple options to rent his land, it may not only be price. I mean, if your brand is that you're a sound agronomist and you have pay attention to the environment and you treat the land well, well, maybe you get that rental contract as opposed to someone who's not viewed that way.
That's quite a bit different view than what we often think of that. We often think of it as just the, well, the Nike swoosh is a good example. It's the, there's your brand. But what you're talking about is something that already exists, even if you haven't marketed it. So when somebody actually comes to you, they're not actually looking at developing a brand. They may be looking at tweaking it. They may be looking at marketing it, but they already have a brand of some sort.
Yeah, and a lot of times we'll do something we call a brand checkup or a health check on your brand, and there's various ways. Usually it involves talking to stakeholders, right? The quickest way to find out what the health and strength of your brand is to ask people, not only customers, but prospects and others in your industry or in your sectors. We do a lot of work in the communications field, but at the base of it, think of the brand as the foundation, right? And it's interesting, agriculture is rife with iconic brands. So when you think about John Deere and Case, you know, people get very passionate. And that's the other thing about brands. They're emotional as well as rational. Like, we all have a rational side of our brain. But if you're running green equipment, it's likely because your dad did and your grandfather, and you will not even entertain, even if there's a better technology that comes out, a better brand proposition, if it's red or blue paint, it's not moving you. So that's bouncing off. If you're a committed John Deere guy or family, that's what you are, right? But even John Deere is subject to brand strengthening and erosion. I'm not an expert in this field, but just some of the scuttlebutt I pick up on Twitter lately is, you know, some uneasiness, not really about prices, but about service and parts. And John Deere's getting into some discussions about that, and I haven't really researched the issue. So, you know, for a passionate John Deere person, they're going to draw down their bank account a little bit, but people are probably not going to switch. And yeah. John Deere is actually, not to pick on them, but they're an example of what we would call an elevated brand. So that's a brand that a consumer will use almost exclusively. So Starbucks people will not go into a Tim Hortons and vice versa. You stop thinking about the value prop behind that. Like, why am I committed to Apple? Well, I just am. It's giving me what I want. I'm used to it. I'm not switching. That's part of it. When it comes down to a farm level, there's elements of that that are in place as well. But the value of the brand at the farm level tends to be more practical, right? Reputation in the community, access to credit, access to land rental. And you know what? It's still a family business. So your own reputation is still important in the farming community.
It's interesting you mentioned John Deere and Case International and the green and red. One of the more fun promotions that we did at several trade shows was we gave away a model tractor. I actually gave away two of them. And one of them was the green and yellow, and the other one was red. And you got a ballot and you could pick one of them. You couldn't put the ballot into both of them. And we kept track of the numbers. And it was interesting people's response to that emotional, yeah, it's got to be green, or it's got to be red, or my husband loves green, but I'm voting red, or I won't enter because you don't have blue. But that's an emotional contact. There's no real reason. I mean, they're both model tractors. And if you give them to a two-year-old or a three-year-old, they're going to love them no matter what. But it's that emotional contact that people wouldn't think of bringing home a red tractor if they're green and yellow is their primary brand.
And, you know, the question is, so why do companies invest in their brands? And it's not for esoteric reasons, it's for financial reasons. Brands inevitably increase the value of the company. They allow you to retain employees. So this is another big thing today, is there is a shortage of skilled employees in agriculture. I think the University of Guelph I forget what the figures were, but there's 4 jobs for every grad, something like that. It's a very robust field. So now you're competing for human capital as well, right? So branding does come down to money. It's not done for fun or because the Nike swoosh is great, but it's a gateway that allows Nike to charge, what, $300? Whereas you can buy no-name brands that I won't say are the same, but are essentially the same for half the price, right?
They'll do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly right. When you look at major league sports teams, so you think the money is in the revenue and the ticket sales and the merchandise, but reality, the brand they're building, the Toronto Blue Jays brand, the club is worth $3 billion. I think if you were to strip the balance sheet down, you'd find that 500 million or even a billion of that is the brand. Coca-Cola, believe it or not, Mike, 50% of their net worth on the balance sheet is the Coke brand, which we've talked about before, exists in the mind of the consumer. So if you take all their bottling plants, all their sugar, all their whatever, that's half the worth of the company. The other half is quote unquote brand equity. I know you're a fairly well off guy. If you were to buy the Coca-Cola company, you would be paying whatever, $10 billion strictly for something that technically doesn't exist. It's not tangible.
And not tangible, but it definitely exists in the minds of consumers. And that kind of brings us back to where we are with the farms. Obviously, that's not something that most people would put on the balance sheet when they own a farm. It's just as important. Well, I shouldn't say just as important, but it's really important when it comes to dealing with, as you said, financial institutions or customers you may want to rent land or customers that you may be trying to sell your product to.
It's a bit of a more subtle argument, but the good news for anyone who's listening today and is a farm owner, operator, you are already building your brand, whether you know it or not, right? Consciously or unconsciously. So my advice for farm operators is all you really have to do is become a little more conscious about it. And it's not the big things, sometimes it's the smaller things, right? How you keep your farm, like my dad, worst job I had as a kid, picking rocks. Second worst, every year we had to whitewash all the fences on the property, which were mainly decorative. They were not the kind of fences that were keeping cattle in. And I couldn't understand why. And one day my dad took me out to the barn and he pointed up and his name, Conn Brothers, was on the barn. He said, that's why we do it. So he was unconsciously helping to build and maintain his farm's brand, right? So for farmers, your stake in the community, your relationship with your banker, your equipment dealer, these are all things as long as you're conscious of it, right? Some of it comes down to integrity, but you know, I find most farmers, farm businesses score highly on the integrity scale. And that's reflected in consumer research. Consumers trust farmers and vets almost more than anyone else in the food supply chain, which, you know, my advice would be start a small website or have a social media presence, even though you don't maybe need it to sell products off the farm. Having a bit of that presence can be useful. The flip side of all this, Mike, as I'm sure you're aware, there's lots of activists now and there's lots of anti-farming sentiment. So part of maintaining a strong brand for your farm operation, it's good for you, it's good for our industry as well, right?
Yeah.
There's a commonality of purpose here. I am stunned because I'm starting to hear the term social contract and license to farm. My good friend Crystal Mackay runs a company called Utensil. She used to be the executive director at the Canadian Center for Food Integrity. This is now a discussion. I couldn't imagine it. My father's family emigrated from Germany in 1939, and there was not enough food around the table. And so, you know, there was hunger in Canada. There still is. And we're now talking, you know, social activism has led to a discussion about, do you have a right to have that farm, that hog farm? Do you have a right to spread manure? So maintaining some kind of presence, some kind of positive image, good for your farm, good for the industry.
I think that idea comes as a shock to many farmers that consider themselves to be the original environmentalists, protectors of the land and of the livestock, that they're the people that look after them and they've always felt they've done a good job. And to hear this has got to be a bit of a shock to a lot of people that, you know, there's people out there saying, well, should you really have that right to do things that way? And it's hard because A lot of farmers take a lot of what they do on the basis of science and feel that they know the science better than the people that are criticizing them. But perception is everything.
Do you like what you're hearing from the Back 40? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments and thoughts to theback40@trilliummutual.com or follow us on social media at Trillium Mutual.
You know, the two big building blocks with branding are consistency and frequency. And when we talk about frequency in the context of a farm itself, it's not so much how many times you run ads as it would be for John Deere or one of our clients like FMC Canada. It's more about becoming involved in your community. It sounds like a small thing, but I think farmers have to realize that there is some spotlight on us now, you know, whether it's environmental or right to farm or livestock production in general. You know, there's any number of things. So part of a farm's brand is being part of the community, maybe being on city council, maybe taking the occasion to give an interview to a local paper. So it's that presence that, again, 40 years ago, I think it was a simpler time in the sense that farmers kept their head down. The deal was we'll produce great quantity and abundance of high nutrition food that's safe and it's available and it's made in Canada and consumers will buy it. And that's our deal. And now consumers are very interested and engaged, not all consumers, but more than ever, in where their food comes from and how it's produced. And being confident enough and prepared to tell that story, that's part of your farm's brand, right? And you know a lot of farmers, Mike, it's not in most farmers' natures to be outwardly focused that way. You know, farmers are, I'm watching the show Yellowstone now, which is highly recommended. But you know, farmers, ranchers, keep your head down, do a full day's work for a full day's pay, and that's it. I think the equation in farming now is you're gonna have to step up a little bit more in ways that you hadn't before.
And a lot of the stuff that you're talking about there, being part of the community and doing things for the community, is a lot of stuff that farmers have done for years. I mean, the farming community has always been particularly close-knit. And if there's a tragedy, everybody shows up and everybody helps. But there's service clubs and they look after activities for kids and make sure that there's facilities out here. What you're talking about, though, is taking that and not just it being part of your brand, which it already is, but promoting that brand a little bit more and telling people about what you're doing.
Just being willing to step up, like I said, giving an interview to someone like yourself or the community newspaper. If you're called for a quote, being willing to do that, having a little farm website and proudly declaring what your business is all about. You know, my dad was in the cattle export business and the dairy industry. And at the end of every dairy farm lane, there was a metal sign. I still have my dad's, and it had that picture. We were Holstein guys, so it had the picture of the animal. I don't see those as much anymore. I don't know what happened, but you know, I think we've taken a step back in a way to avoid public scrutiny and pressure. I think it's time to take another step forward and proudly, you know, advocate for agriculture.
So when someone comes to you, they're not looking necessarily to develop that brand as much as they are looking to promote that brand. How do you go about doing that? What sort of steps would you take to promote that brand and help somebody develop something that they really can market?
We do a little bit of both. We will work with companies who are looking to establish a brand as well as companies that have one and want to make it better. We do not, frankly, have a lot of farmer customers who we are building brands for. And you know what? They don't really need an agency. So I'll pick on the Walker brothers down near Elmer just because their grandfather did business with my dad, John Walker, Big John Walker.
Yep.
You know, they've started from scratch, and the way you build a brand, despite what I said before about the brand being the sum total of everything you do, usually do start with some kind of a graphic, you know, the image part of it. But it really comes down to mission, vision, values, right? Good brands are built on a foundation of values more than anything else. And so when we're going through a branding exercise, we'll do a lot of work. If it's an existing client, understanding their mission, vision, values. Typically, we will then do a gut check in the market. We'll talk to some of their customers, their suppliers, their stakeholders. We'll look for alignment. So is what they want to be, is who they are, what the market perceives them to be. And really from there, the answer is if it's pulling wildly apart, well, that's one discussion. If it's still consistent and pretty tight, then that's less work, put it that way. Again, it comes down to consistency and frequencies. We have a major crop protection company. They're called FMC. FMC was a quiet little company until 2018. They acquired some of the divested brands from DuPont, which had merged with Dow. That's a lot of information. But anyway, all of a sudden, FMC is the world's fifth largest crop protection company. And so we've been on a journey with them. What is your voice? And the voice we have established for FMC, which ties to their culture, they're a little lighter on their feet. They're a little more flexible. They're a little more farmer oriented than the big four. Because they're the fifth company in the market, they either need to compete head on with the big guys or differentiate. And in this case, the brand strategy is to differentiate. They are trying, and I think succeeding, in being the WestJet to Air Canada, if that makes sense. When I say Air Canada and WestJet, they're both airlines. They both deliver, produce the same product. You get on here and you get off there, right? Takeoffs equal landings, two dramatically different companies.
Going along that line there, is it easier sometimes to start a new brand? We've certainly in the crop protection industry there, we've seen some brands that have not had a good reputation with the public at large. Is it easier to start something new and say, hey, this is what we stand for? Or does that old perception carry on there? And is it difficult to shake?
That is a really good question and an interesting question. I haven't thought of that before, but so I'd say if you have a strong brand in the market, especially in agriculture, it's easy if you wanted to morph that or revise it or change it, then start over. Because they say farmers have long memories and quick tempers, right? So if you have a strong brand equity, it's easy to build off that. But if there is some negativity associated with it, it's actually one of the hardest challenges we find in ag is if you've got a, let's say, a less than stellar brand, to rebuild that. Because farmers, they react to the experiences they've had with you. Starting a new brand, the benefit is you get a clean slate, can start from the ground up. You know, even companies like Novartis, who morphed over to become Syngenta, it takes years to really establish who you are. And companies tend to overrate their own brand scorecard, by the way. I've seen research that after how many years has Roundup been in the marketplace, that it still does not have 100% brand recognition, believe it or not. And even less so is it associated with Monsanto, which is now Bayer. So picking on Monsanto for a minute, I think they have been unjustly labeled with some negative perception around glyphosate and GMOs. A guy named Steve Denise, the Denise family, I forget where he is now, but he's a pretty stellar guy in the ag community. He got up at a CAMA meeting once and said, you know, when history looks back at Monsanto 50 years down the road, they'll be given a Nobel Peace Prize for the productivity and efficiency they brought to the ag sector. Today, that wouldn't be the brand perception. I don't think too many people other than Steve would say Monsanto's up for a Nobel Prize. So that's a hard one to resurrect for whatever reasons they acquired that reputation. But I think Steve may be right. When history looks back, they'll say, you know what, Monsanto and the Monsanto brand and the Roundup brand, when you look at the effect it had on agricultural productivity, how many people were able to be fed, what was the lessening of the chemical load due to GMO crops, you can make a case. But today, that's a hard one, right? And I think there, when they acquired Monsanto, it was with the intent to bury the Monsanto brand. They didn't feel they could. I don't have insider knowledge on this. I'm speculating, but my guess is they felt they couldn't resuscitate it. So they've gone the other way.
It's an interesting brand because I think it's still, for a lot of farmers, it still certainly holds a lot of positive connotations there. Yet for the consumer at large, for many of them, it's just deadly. And I don't know whether or not you can survive that, because we still have to sell to those consumers, whether we're selling directly to them or whether we're selling to through middlemen. They have to trust the food supply, and right now that brand does not give a lot of confidence to consumers.
Every company has a brand, call it a brand bank account. So as you do good work and as you live up your values, you get capital, right, in the minds of your customers. So I forget the year, it was somewhere around 1987, DuPont had launched this novel new class of chemistry called the SUs. I won't try and say it, it's sulfonylurea. Anyway, I always mess it up. The SU chemistry. And it did amazingly well. And DuPont was a very reputable company. And around year 4, 5, or 6, we had a year in Ontario where the weather conditions were hot, humid, or just the right time, and it dinged a bunch of the crops to a serious extent. And so that could have been a killer for DuPont, but they stood behind it. They did the right things. They worked with the farmers. They very much lived their own internal brand. And guess what? They came out of it doing better than ever. I was working for American Cyanamid at the time, and we thought, great, here we go. We can take full advantage of this. And guess what? DuPont came out of it looking better coming out of it than they had coming in. And that's sort of incorporated into your brand right there. It's the ability to recover from missteps. Whereas if you have a terrible brand and something bad happens, it can almost wipe you out.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because we can all think of brands where there's been problems. And let's be fair, nobody goes through life without making mistakes. And a lot of times you're judged more on what do you do with those mistakes and how do you deal with them? Then you are judged by the fact that you made one in the first place, or that you had a disaster, or that something went wrong. What did you do? Did you stand behind the people that were your consumers? Did you fix the problem? How did you go about fixing the problem? And of course, what was the messaging? How did we message that out to people? Because it's not enough just to do it. You also have to tell people that you're doing it.
And you know, going right back to farm level, that's equally true, right? Whatever your reputation is, whatever you aspire to be, it comes to life when you're challenged with adversity. The most famous example of this is, you're old enough to remember this one. It was Johnson & Johnson with Tylenol, and someone had tampered with 4 bottles of Tylenol, and I forget what the substance was, and they caught them all. So 4 out of however many millions of bottles. And Johnson & Johnson, as the legend goes, they're bored net, and what to do? Do we just kind of, you know, let it pass? But they actually went back to their own mission, vision, values, and corporate ethics, and they said, nope, what we're required to do is remove every bottle of Tylenol off the shelves from North America. So imagine what that cost. And they never did find more than 3 or 4 bottles, but that's what J&J did. They came back with that beautiful tamper-proof packaging that we all love now, and they have done spectacularly better than ever. Now think of what the opportunity cost was. They could have just as easily gone the other way and said, you know what, it's a small localized problem, we're going to walk away from it. But they lived up to their brand, and they've benefited from it ever since.
Yeah, in the long run, that's good for your brand, but you're seen to have done something. And you're right, I do remember that. That changed how we get our medications. The tamper-proof packaging before that, nobody ever thought of that. Nobody ever heard of that. And now we all take that for granted.
Well, and I'll give you an example. So we did a consulting study for farm and food care, and it was around manure management and spreading manure when you shouldn't. Like in the winter, there are certain times you shouldn't. And there's times when farmers get into a bind, they have no choice, they have to. But taking that out of the equation, there are other guys who just say, you know, I'm going to do it. It's my farm. I'll do what I want. That goes into your brand, because every once in a while there's a train wreck and there's a bunch of manure that gets into the water system and it gets traced back. And that's what I'm talking about. It's easy to live up to your values and your brand when things are going well. But when you have that moment of truth, should I or shouldn't I? Then that's when your brand is either reinforced or deteriorates.
And it's a lot easier to really do damage to your brand than it is to build it back up again afterwards.
Yeah. But again, if you've got a good brand scorecard, if you've been operating in an ethical way or whatever you aspire to be, then it is easier and quite possible to recover from that. And sometimes we like to think it's talk about business to business, but business is people to people, no matter how you cut it. Yep. People will generally give you a break if you've been on a certain path and this is a mistake or whatever, and you acknowledge it. That all goes into your brand, right? For farms that want to go direct to consumer, then you get into that more traditional branding path where you do need to have an image and you need to associate yourself with certain graphics or imagery. You probably need a website and social media presence. These are all kind of the standards now. but there's not a lot of farms that are doing that. So for the most part, I think what you're talking about is just that reputation management for your own farm operation.
So do you have any recommendations or any advice to farmers out there that are operating and are wondering, what should we do with a brand, or should we go down this route?
Yeah, well, like I said before, whether a farmer thinks he is or is not, he does have a brand. So my advice is just be a little more cognizant of it. If someone has an interest in it, do a little bit of reading, have a nice sign at the end of the laneway, consider being on social media, consider speaking up under your farm's name on critical issues, associate yourself with associations like Canadian Center for Food Integrity, those kinds of things. So really, any steps you take are positive steps. There's not a cookie cutter formula, right? It depends what kind of farm you have. Doing something is better than doing nothing, and just being cognizant of it, right, to me is the most important thing.
Appreciate you taking time to talk to us today, Len. We're talking to Len Kahn from Contact. If people want to find out more about what your company does or get in touch with you, how do they go about that?
Easiest way is our website, contact.com, spelled like my last name, KAHNTACT.com. By email, I'm lkahn@contact.com. And of course, we're on all the major social media platforms. Probably Twitter is the best. You can follow us at Contact.
We've been talking with Len Kahn. Thank you very much for taking the time today. You've been listening to The Back 40.
Thanks, Mike.
You've been listening to The Back 40, brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance. Join us next time. We'll be talking with Amanda Broadhagen about various issues surrounding the beef industry in Canada. Be sure to subscribe to The Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together, one podcast.